one of those moments here on the show where I look over and I realize the bumper music is playing. I had no idea. Hi, Lord Extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's one of those mornings where I find these particular stories and was completely unaware of what was going on with this. And we'll talk a little bit about this as we get into some other issues with Jeff. But the main topic last hour of the Minnesota will send money to communities harmed by marijuana prohibition. You have Senator Lindsey Port at a DFL saying it's a form of reparation. Real quick, though, I want to mention that, and we'll try to give you some details before the end of the show, but the transcript from Devin Archer's testimony earlier this week has been released. And so details are now coming out about what Devin Archer testified in that closed door hearing, as it relates to the potential corruption and the bribery scheme of Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. So we'll try to give you some details of, from this and what's been coming out, in the course of this past hour. Again, I'm not holding my breath that Hunter's going to be held accountable or the president for any of this. It does feel like the walls are closing in a little bit, Jeff, if you wanted to comment on that at all.
Yeah, it does. I told one of my partners yesterday, I've never seen two individuals get sent a larger message that maybe they shouldn't be running for president.
It's kind of a, it's funny because I haven't talked about it this morning, but Newsom and DeSantis had agreed to a debate.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's over like which place is better to live or something to this effect. Is that what the debate is supposed to be over? But it really is coming off sort of like as the sort of alternative of what could potentially, you know, happen based off of what's playing out between Trump and Biden. But let's spin back over to what we were talking about last hour. Minnesota is going to invest, doing nothing with my fingers, tens of millions of dollars into communities that were harmed by marijuana prohibition as part of a new state program hailed as both nation-leading and a way to provide reparations. I don't remember hearing about this during the legislative session, although in speaking with you, I think maybe I did, but it wasn't referred to at the time as reparations, and it was just like, hey, some of this money is going to be given back to communities to help them, you know, grow their economy. Now that we're past the legislative session, now that recreational cannabis is legal, it seems as if the DFL is sort of showing the broader scope of what they intend to do here. And in my opinion, it looks like they're just attempting to go and buy votes.
Yeah.
Is that a well duh?
Well, yeah, a little bit. You know, there's, as I said before, John, there are pieces of this new law that I'm not a fan of, but I've always said that anything is better than when your policy is prohibition. I think that was a problem.
Sure.
I think there are going to be things that that are revisited and corrected over time. You know, I come from being in the alcohol space too, and we're 100 years past the end of alcohol prohibition, and or about from alcohol prohibition, and we're still correcting things, right? But my message is I have a little bit different take on it. Maybe it's a little bit more, I don't know, maybe it's a cynical take call, whatever, but for the Republicans that are complaining about this, the elected Republicans here in Minnesota, they had their chance. They had control of the state Senate last year. There was a legalization bill that the DFL passed out of the House last year. Their response was no.
Yeah.
If I was creating the cannabis legalization bill, there would be, you know, there would be licensing, there'd be taxes, and the taxes, I would offset the income tax with any revenues that the state's getting from marijuana taxes. But they didn't call me, you know,
right.
They said no, that, you know, they have this attitude that it's the devil's lettuce and they don't want to do anything on it. And so they miss. And so now they, you know, these calls for a special session and wanting to fix the cannabis bill. They don't have any leverage. They had it last year and they chose to just say no. And remember our late great friend Drew had said, I think he had tweeted it or posted on Facebook years ago, that the Republicans oppose this at their own electoral peril.
Sure.
And they have proven him right at every turn.
Yeah, you wonder, you know, I don't know. you know, hindsight being what it is, we don't know if it would have made an impact as it relates to the outcome of the election. However, it certainly is correct in as much as I would have definitely, like, I'm with you. I support the, you know, the lifting of the prohibition and making, you know, recreational marijuana, legal. I support it just vocally, on the show. I'm very much of the opinion that eventually it's going to be decriminalized, across the country. And I'm okay with us starting a little bit, you know, starting early, like other states have had, sort of paving the way. I would have been incredibly reluctant if I had known that a vast majority of the tax revenue from the cannabis sales was going to be funneled into this alleged, program, or a form of reparation for individuals who have experienced a disproportionately large amount of cannabis in enforcement. Cause it's just there's going to be no oversight on this. It's not going to go to the programs that they say it's going to go to. And in my opinion, it's purely just to go funnel into communities where they can shore up votes the next election cycle. And it bums me out. To your point, you know, there's a quote in here from GOP State Representative Nolan West of Blaine, voted in favor of the marijuana law, but said he doesn't support the Can Renew grant program. I don't think they had any choice in the matter, you know.
No.
But you're right. They should have taken care of it before the DFL trifecta took place, and this kind of thing could have potentially not been in it.
When Republican votes were needed to legalize it, that was the time to speak up and craft something. Now, one thing also about the social equity applicant component with the licensing.
Yeah.
Just to be clear what it is, you know, this is not an open license system like alcohol where you meet the requirements, you're going to get a license.
Okay.
Office of Cannabis Management is going to decide how many different, each of the license types are going to be available. They're doing that to prevent oversaturation of the market going from prohibition to legalization. Okay. Which is typical when legalization has happened in other states. So this social equity piece, if there's a surplus of applicants to licenses, there will be a weighting of the applicants in terms of like a score, okay? Social equity applicant counts for 20% of the score. So when you talk about the preference, that's what they're talking about. But there's other components like having a business plan, having a security plan, having financing, having experience, you know, running this type of business. There's other pieces to this.
Okay.
But the idea was, it was borrowed from other states.
You're not selling me on this, by the way.
I'm just telling you what it is.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Gotcha,
I'm just explaining
gotcha.
What it is.
Sure.
That yes, having a cannabis, a conviction for a cannabis offense, or a parent or guardian or child having a conviction, does put you into the social equity box.
All right, I want to get a little bit more into this. We have more to cover because there's other confusion around this cannabis bill. We'll talk briefly, but I invoked your name earlier this week when it comes to the Minnesota bicyclists being able to roll through some stop signs now. I have some questions with regard to that. So more with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. If you have any questions, 651-989-5855. And if it falls under his expertise, he will attempt to answer those for you. Can also leave a comment on the iHeartRadio app. I want to congratulate Jonathan and Lance. Got the next pair of tickets to go see Tim Slagle again tonight, tomorrow night, and Saturday night at Acme Comedy Company. We do have one more pair to give away before the end of today's show. Be listening for your opportunity to call in and win, and more with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien next, right here on Twin Cities News Talk.
Good morning, gentlemen. I would like to hear Jeff's opinion on the tobacco shop in Faribault that was selling pot plants yesterday, and they got them confiscated. Just thoughts on that would be stupendous.
Since we're talking about reparations for prohibitions of the past, when the alcohol prohibition was, my great-great-grandmother ran the still in northern Minnesota or Minnesota area, later became the Steig-Glick brewery, which turned out to be the Cold Spring Brewery after a while. I wonder if my family's entitled to reparations from the state of Minnesota for that enforcement that was made against her. Just asking.
Well, I liked Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. I like the idea of one of the... Actually, we had several people that left comments on the iHeartRadio app here on Twin Cities News Talk about if there was... I mean, you had to get really specific, but if you had an area where the speed limit was one speed limit, people got tickets, and then it changed, if those individuals can get their money back from the tickets that they got on there. I just think it's personally ridiculous that we're going to have a form of reparation to send money to communities that this committee will deem was harmed by the marijuana prohibition.
Yeah, and again, I don't know if that's what was intended by this, or if this is just kind of after the fact trying to refer it as
a reframing. Yeah, talking to you, it sounds like it a bit, because again, I think that I remember hearing something about this funding going to it, but it absolutely was not framed this way.
And perhaps, you know, and I think before I got here, I was listening to the show, and I think you guys were, someone was talking about, is this trying to kind of open the door up to further talk about reparations?
Right.
I have a different take. You know, the trifecta this session was all about checking off all the boxes and being able to say they got all this stuff done. This may be a way of kind of retroactively referring to this as reparations so they can check that box off and take that to the voters next year saying, hey, we did it.
No reason
to have a commission or this, you know, because remember how poorly that went in California where Newsom basically said, yeah, we're not doing that. When they came up with what the price tag was, he said, no, we're not doing it. This may be their way of kind of after the fact saying, we did it.
All right. I'll give that to you. We'll see. We'll see. I have one more question on this. Before I get to that, though, the comment of the Faribault.
Yeah, the tobacco shop.
Yeah, the tobacco shop that got busted for selling pot plants.
Well, you know, there is some confusion right now. I had a call yesterday. The liquor stores are being sending them out price information on bundles of marijuana. And so we're trying to get the word out that this is not allowed yet. To be clear, you cannot, right now what's legal as of Tuesday is personal use and possession and the growing at home up to 8 plants for flowering. And then of course the Red Lake Reservation, they have a dispensary that's open. And I understand that I think White Earth and Leech Lake may be following suit here soon. But in terms of any sort of business in Minnesota selling marijuana, that's going to require a license, and those licenses are not going to be ready until the application process will start next year. But all the information has been that the licenses aren't going to be issued until 2025. So for the tobacco shops, for liquor stores, for any retailer out there, you cannot be selling full strength cannabis in any form in your store. The low potency hemp edibles, the gummies, the, you know, all that kind of stuff, the stuff that was legalized last year, those can be sold right now without a license up until March 1 of 2025. The retailers that are selling them have to register with the Office of Cannabis Management by October 1st of this year. If you go online, there is a form already available for that. But there's no you just basically have to declare what you're selling, right? So low potency hemp products, okay. Full strength, you're going to need to wait a while.
But doesn't that run a bit, I'm just throwing out hypotheticals here, doesn't that run a bit afoul of what message they're sending with the form of reparation for individuals who may have disproportionately been hurt when it was illegal, and now we're going to give money back to those communities if we're still going to hold individuals accountable for not being able to sell it yet, even though we've made it legal from a recreational standpoint? I know it's more of a hypothetical.
Well, now it's now it's a different offense, John. Now it's, you know, by selling something without a license, you're basically selling something without the state getting its cut.
Oh, okay. I got you. So let me ask you this. Should we have to wait as long as we are for these businesses to be able to open from your standpoint? Should it take as long as it's going to take for the vast majority of individuals to be able to sell this product?
I wish it didn't. I really hope that somehow they figure out a way of doing this more expeditiously than waiting until 2025. Perhaps they will. But once the decision is made to require licenses for this type of business, which you would expect because we do it for alcohol,
sure,
right? And they're similar heavily regulated industries. Once that decision is made and you now have to have a, they have to create this Office of Cannabis Management. Mm-hmm. And that's in part because none of the other agencies that had any say in some of this up until now, they didn't want to touch it. The Board of Pharmacy doesn't have enough enforcement people. Alcohol and gambling enforcement didn't want to have it. So they had to create this new agency to oversee this because no one else, they're like, not my, you know, not doing it, right?
Sure.
So it's just a matter of how, you know, plodding and slow our state government is. There was some talk that the governor is going to interview the candidates for OCM director at the state fair, like in a tent. And if that's the case, so it's like, dude, just, I mean, they could.
Come on.
They really need to,
yeah,
to expedite the hiring of the staffing of that office.
Here's the project.
So that there can be,
would you like to be a part of,
yeah,
this?
So that there can be rules and regulations and stuff like that. So.
All right. More with Jeff O'Brien coming up. We'll talk. I have a few more questions, with regard, to the legalization of recreational marijuana here in the state. We'll also, get into the bicycle law a bit. I got a couple of questions with that. And Minnesota should pay businesses for COVID-19 lockdown losses, according to one state lawmaker. Right now, we'll take caller number 5, 651-989-5855. Caller number 5 will have their choice of which night they would like to go see comedian Tim Slagle at Acme Comedy Company, either tonight, tomorrow night, or there are two shows available on Saturday. So caller number 5 right now to 651-989-5855 will pick up their choice of night to go see comedian Tim Slagle from Twin Cities News Talk. Congratulations to Jason on a pair of tickets to go see Tim Slagle. Acme Comedy Company this weekend, performing tonight, tomorrow night, and two shows on Saturday. Hey, Robbie, do we have a night that's most popular that people are choosing to go see comedian Tim Slagle?
Yeah, so far 3 out of the 5 have chosen Saturday night at 7 o'clock. Yeah. So it could be a who's nice. Who of friends of the show.
Nice.
In that Saturday appearance by Tim Slagle, Acme Comedy Company. Once again, he's going to be appearing 5 shows Thursday night, Friday for 2, and Saturday for 2.
We will have more tickets to give away every single hour again on tomorrow's show, and we'll offer up the multiple ways as we did this morning here on Twin Cities News Talk, having you call in, but also if you happen to be listening online, we'll give you an opportunity to win those as well. So we'll have more tickets on tomorrow's show. Jeff O'Brien, Lawyer Extraordinaire, joins us in studio. Talking, well, we've been talking a lot of marijuana. We got some other issues to get to. I believe we do have a comment question from the iHeartRadio app for you.
Hey, John, wondering if you could ask Jeff this question. If license for marijuana sales will not be handed out until 2025, then why did it become legal August 1st? It sounds to me like maybe they just want to be able to hand out some fines between now and then. Something does not seem right about this.
Yeah, is there a legit reason for that?
Well, parts of the law, you know, certain things became legal as of August 1st, obviously personal use and consumption. The grow at home being legalized is the attempt to try to cut off the black market, right? It's problematic that you have to wait so long to get the licensing structure up and running. The alternative would have been just let people do this as a business without a license, but they weren't going to do that. it is what it is. You know, as I said before, there's no clean way to go from prohibition to legalization. We're still, alcohol prohibition happened 100 years ago. It was, you know, it was taken off the books relatively quickly. But we're still finding, there's still things that we end up changing in the liquor laws that somehow is, you can tie back to prohibition. So it's not a clean thing to do. That's why we don't like prohibition.
I will always remember. I'll go that route. I will always remember I was working in Atlanta. In Atlanta for a rock station. I hadn't been there very long. I'd gone to the local grocery store on a Sunday and had tried to buy some alcohol. And they're like, you can't purchase that. And I was like, well, here's my ID.
Yeah.
Like, no, you can't buy that. What are you talking about? I can't buy this.
Like, that was Minnesota up until 7 years ago.
Right. And I had no idea at the time. I was like, what? This is still going on. And of course, when we came here and we talked about it here on the show so much.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still the case. Just as an example. I want to get back to, real quick, Minnesotans who meet the certain social equity criteria will be given preference for the cannabis business licenses. You said that score accounted for 20% of the overall.
As I recall from the law, the bill, there's going to be the Office of Cannabis Management will decide how many of each type of license is available. They're doing it to prevent an oversaturation of the market going right into this from legalization, right? Because it could be a free for all. So if there is a surplus of applicants to licenses, and most likely it's going to land in the micro business, meso business, or the dispensary side of things, the ones that have the retail part. They will weight those applications. 20% of the score is whether they qualify as a social equity applicant. So if a parent, spouse, child, or guardian have had a cannabis related conviction, that counts. If you are a disabled veteran, that counts. If you are I think they call it an emerging farmer, which that's where they, you know, it could be, you know.
Falling under the social equity criteria.
Correct.
Okay.
That's 20%. But there's another 80% that counts for your business plan, your security plan, because you got a cash-based business and you're going to have a security plan, your experience running this type of business and your financing. If you're just a veteran but not a disabled veteran, and I don't mean just a veteran, but if you're a veteran but not disabled, that is like 10% of the score outside of social equity applicant.
So that social equity doesn't sound nearly as egregious as we've seen typically of the word equity being thrown around.
No.
At least the way you're describing
it. It's similar to many other states.
Your DEIESG kind of thing.
Right. Many other states that have legalized have this type of component. The idea, this, you know, you talk about the discussion about reparations. This was originally what was thought of as, hey, we're going to, for folks that may have been wrongfully prosecuted for selling or whatever, we're going to give them a chance to do it legitimately. And we're going to give them a chance to apply for a license. So there's other controls set up. There's a lot of things set up in here in large part to try to keep the out of state players from just swooping in here and taking the entire industry, right?
Okay.
So there's other, it's just another guardrail to try to give, basically people that are here in Minnesota, including those that maybe have been convicted of a cannabis offense or other groups, to get a shot at these licenses.
When it comes to some of the confusion, and we've talked about the stories this past week on the show about where you can go and consume it, and some of the bigger questions that the cities have been having, and the moratoriums on where you can go and consume it publicly. I mean, what are your thoughts on that confusion? The cities sort of taking preemptive measures of putting a pause on allowing it to be consumed in public.
The cities have that right to do it. You know, there's provisions in the bill about no public consumption. It's particularly the smoking and the vaping, I think that people have been concerned with, they call it the contact high or whatever. I think that for a lot of people, I think they're still going to be getting their THC fixed through the beverages, the low dose beverages that were legalized last year. Could be the gummies, the candies, things like that. That's part of what the grow at home thing was, is if you want to blaze up, grow your own plants and do it. you can gift somebody 2 ounces without payment, that kind of stuff.
So you can do that, but you can't loan somebody your gun anymore.
Right, exactly. Okay, but I will say this, one of the issues that wasn't addressed in the legislation, perhaps to me, the biggest issue that wasn't addressed, and if there was a chance for, if they needed to come back and fix something sooner than next session, this would be the piece I would focus on. For the on-premise licensees for alcohol, they have been told by their dram shop insurance carriers, dram shop liability is you overserve somebody, they go out and injure or kill somebody, you're liable, right?
Right.
You have insurance for that. The insurance companies have said if we find out that you've been serving both alcohol and THC, we're denying your claims. So here's the issue. If you have a bar that has a outdoor smoking patio and you watch somebody blaze up a joint or vaping, what you clearly can tell is cannabis, if you serve them a drink, have you just put yourself on the hook for a dram shop claim? That piece, the insurance piece, really does need to be addressed sooner rather than later by the legislature.
Is that solvable?
Yeah. I think, you know, we have laws that say that filing a claim, you know, against your insurance, like your homeowner's insurance, the insurance company can't terminate your coverage because you filed a claim, right? You could put something in the law that says that a dram shop carrier couldn't deny a claim solely because you are serving, you know, you are provide, you know, serving THC. You know, products containing THC. You could do that, sure.
Okay. Let's move over to this story. And we didn't have to spend a ton of time on it, but this is how I invoke your name a lot on the show. But this is the reason earlier this week why I mentioned you. So bicyclists in Minnesota will soon have some legal cover for doing what many of them are probably already doing, and that choosing at times to keep rolling rather than coming to a halt at a stop sign. So thanks to this provision, a newly enacted transportation finance legislation, bicyclists approaching a four-way stop intersection can treat the sign as saying a yield, scan for other vehicles while slowing down, and continue to roll if clear. That kicked in earlier this week. So again, this is your rolling stop, right? Mm-hmm. It's also known as an Idaho stop. So where do the legalities lie on this in terms of responsibility in the case of an accident of a cyclist going through now an intersection? And then they get hit by a car. Whereas, I guess maybe if you know, sort of establish what it was before as it relates to rules of the road and cyclists and how this changes that.
Well, you know, my understanding is before this, a cyclist had to treat the stop sign as a stop sign, just like a motor vehicle, right?
Right.
In terms of liability for if there was a vehicle versus bicycle accident, you're going to decide based on, I think it's facts and circumstances, right? If you have car versus car accidents, you know, did somebody turn on or make a right turn on a red light? Did somebody, you know, did they come to a stop and then start out, you know, they call it hazardous proceeding, right? So I think it's all just because the bicyclists now have the ability to do the rolling stop or the, you know, treat the stop sign as a yield sign, isn't going to exculpate them from liability if they do something that in those facts and circumstances would be hazardous and would have been the cause of an accident.
I'm honestly a little bit concerned about this particular law. I just, as an individual that rides his bike almost every single day, you know, and I know that I try to do the best job I can of looking at intersections and all that, but I also know that you often don't see people and there's blind spots, and I'm worried about, you know, cyclists sort of blowing through these stops and getting nailed by an individual who may have legally stopped at the stop sign but just wasn't looking to see that person coming.
I have the same concern. I you know, the studies have shown that this type of law has reduced the number of crashes. However, there's some really bad drivers in this community.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you throw in the texting and everything else, I guess Minnesota's going to put it to the test to see if the if this could be the was it the law of averages here? We could be the exception that proves the rule or something. I don't know.
We're putting a lot of things to the test, unfortunately.
But I do have that concern just because of I just notice it all the time how many inattentive drivers we have on the road.
There's a when I pull into my neighborhood off of 125th and 65. There's a shopping center to the right, and there's a restaurant to the left. And that shopping center gets pretty busy. You know, there's the haircut place that I go to in there. There's a Perkins in there. But people come out to either go right or left on that street as I pull into my neighborhood. And as I go through the green light and I head down there before I hang left into my neighborhood, I don't care if there's a car there or not. I slow way down because half the people, they don't look. They don't look when they're coming out. And I'm constantly looking, and I can see them looking the other direction. And I'm saying in my car, look this way. Look this way, you know, and then they finally do. But you got to be proactive. I'm worried about it. Let's go here. From Epic Times. The recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic will take longer in Minnesota for some businesses than others. A state lawmaker, this will be Representative Shane Mecklen, thinks that business owners should be compensated for their losses from the stat-mandated lockdowns. So, tell us about this.
So, Representative Mecklen is a longtime friend and client of mine. There's a reference in the story to this expert lawyer that he talked with.
Oh.
Full disclosure, it was me. So Shane and I will kind of, you know, BS about different things all the time, and occasionally he'll just say, I think I'm going to introduce a bill. You know, it comes out of those discussions, right? And so this was like 3 years ago. More than 3 years ago, during COVID, we were talking because, you know, eminent domain, there's a variation of eminent domain called inverse condemnation. When the government takes some regulatory action that amounts to a taking of someone's property,
okay,
right? We get this in the real estate context. When we first had the first COVID shutdown of the bars and restaurants, my partners and I had looked at whether or not there was any ability to bring an eminent domain, an inverse condemnation action against the governor for compensation, for shutting them down. The point was not it was twofold. The idea being this wouldn't, a shutdown like that wouldn't have been as controversial if the state was writing checks out.
Right.
To business owners.
Sure.
To cover their losses, right? You wouldn't have had business owners opening up, in defiance of his orders and things, if they were being paid to stay shut.
Right.
Right. The other piece of it is the lockdowns wouldn't have gone on as long, or it's another balancing. There was no balancing of the business owner's interests because there was no economic, harm to this or economic impact to the state by having to pay people out, right?
Right.
In eminent domain cases, the governments try to minimize the taking so that they don't have to pay out a lot of money. So that was when there was no precedent to do something like that. And that's when I was talking with Shane and relayed this to him. And that's where this came out of was, yeah, it makes sense. Why does it have to be limited to real estate? So Shane's been in the House with the DFL under control. So it didn't get a hearing the first time it was introduced. It didn't get a hearing in the House the second time it was introduced. But, Senator Andrew Matthews gave it a hearing. He introduced a parallel bill in the state Senate when the Republicans had control, and he had a hearing on it. Under the current leadership, there is no chance it will get a hearing.
Right.
But, you know, that's why you keep trying to bring stuff up, and eventually it might go somewhere.
Now, was there any discussion on where the money would be pulled in order to compensate the businesses?
Well, that's part of the problem, right?
Right.
I mean, if you're having to, drain the education budget because you want to keep a bunch of businesses closed, maybe you don't keep the businesses closed.
And this would certainly be different in terms of the COVID relief loans that these businesses ended up receiving.
The benefit of, you know, like the PPP and the they called them loans, but for the large amount of people, it was forgivable. In a way, those functioned as compensation for businesses being shut down. But it was more to pay for, you know, the expenses like rent and employees and things like that versus nobody compensated these business owners for their lost profits. So when you see, there's still You know, a lot of businesses that you'll see closed today that it's really, it comes down to, it still may be kind of a hangover from being shut down during COVID. You know, back to our discussion on the cannabis stuff, for the breweries in town, you know, with the low dose THC stuff that was legalized last year.
Right.
We would have had more breweries shut down had they not had the right to do that. Because I've been told anecdotally by some of my clients that they've made back pretty much all of the revenue they lost during the COVID lockdowns by selling those beverages. So they had a different, they found their way out of it. But you occasionally still see a business that just doesn't make it. And, you know, we can argue whether or not it was, if that was part of it.
Did the legalization of recreational marijuana, did it change any of the dynamics of what the breweries were already doing with these low dose beverages, or did it make any substantial changes to that, or provide them any other opportunities?
No, thankfully. So the initial draft of the bill didn't include that, and that was put back in the Senate, one of the Senate committee hearings. They added back in the low dose products and the licenses so that the breweries could continue to make and sell those beverages.
Now, I know you've been doing quite a bit of traveling as of late. I want to talk to you a little bit about that before we let you go this morning. We have reached that portion of the show where if you missed any part of it, Robbie will recap what it is you might have missed.
And today's recap is brought to you by the Sandfold Financial Group. In the 6 a.m. hour, Robbie's rundown included stories on a new cancer pill that is showing promise, a quick change scheme invades Twin Cities retailers, and gas prices keep rising nationwide. While in the 7 a.m. hour, we talk reparations and marijuana and certain controversial controversial classes that are being offered in local schools. And in the 8 a.m. hour, we had lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien in studio to talk everything surrounding the legalization of marijuana and the laws attached to it, plus some news on the bicycle laws that went into effect a couple of days ago as well. If you missed any of today's program, listen to the podcast at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com or download it wherever you consume your audio.
In the bit of time that we have left, I don't know if you have a quick answer to this, Jeff. We did have a talkback that came in, and they were asking, with it still being illegal at the federal level, marijuana, how does that square with the states making it legal? Is there a conflict there?
It's complicated.
Okay. All right. We'll leave it as complicated. Maybe we can share that. We can get into that a little bit more deeper when we have time to have you back in. Before we wrap things up, though, I know that, like, it seems like every time you and I talk, you're in some other state being, you know, sworn in as something or receiving something. So what have you been up to, man?
So, I'm besides being licensed in Minnesota, I'm now licensed in the four surrounding states. I've been in Wisconsin since 2006.
You're syndicated.
I know.
You're a syndicated
lawyer. And I'm on the non-resident lawyer board over in Wisconsin. And then Iowa, South Dakota, and now I just took my oath for North Dakota yesterday. And then for federal courts, it's Minnesota, two districts in Iowa. And last week when I think you reached out to me, I was in pure South Dakota to be admitted into federal court. So, I joke about how I've got the exits covered now from Minnesota. And it's a lot of different, you know, you've got three red states, a purple state, and a blue state. There's a lot of different laws and a lot of different things that go on in those states.
I was just thinking that's got to be difficult to manage in terms of the how the states differentiate interpreting, you know, certain laws and all that. So
but it's fun though. It's challenging and it's fun.
You see, you know, I like doing this. You can do that. So you'll go and handle, you know, issues in these other states. Now are you going to be traveling more how does that work in the like 1 minute?
Possibly, you know, on the way back from South Dakota last week, I did stop at, we have a distillery client, new distillery client just on the eastern side in, Brandt, South Dakota. So I was able to stop there and, nice, and see their operation. And, you know, we've got some lawsuits going down in federal court in Iowa. It's various things. And, we just got a lot of stuff going on. You know, we're an upper Midwest law firm. We're not just a Minneapolis law firm.
So certainly you'll be buying an EV soon for all this traveling.
Maybe I need to get your son to fly me around, you know.
You should talk to him about that.
Yeah.
All right, thank you so much for coming in today, man. That was good stuff.
Thanks for having me.
On a tomorrow show, why are we tearing down, or why have we torn down memorial statues of past leaders while erecting memorials of recent criminals. Representative Dean Phillips stupidly weighed in on the I-94 State Patrol shooting and will have more tickets to see Tim Slagle performing this weekend, including tonight at Acme Comedy Company. If you are interested in purchasing tickets, and I encourage you to do so, you can reach out to Acme Comedy Company by going to their website, acmecomedycompany.com. And he'll be back in studio with us on tomorrow's show as well. So we're back at it tomorrow, 6 a.m. Robbie's Rundown for a Friday. Thank you for hanging out today. We'll talk to you then. Bye.
You know that Big Bargain detergent jug is 85% water, right?
85% water? I thought I was getting a better deal because it's so big.
If you want a better clean, Tide Pods are only 12% water. The rest is pure, concentrated cleaning ingredients.
Oh, pass me the intercom thing.
Attention shoppers. If you want a real deal, try Tide Pods.
Don't pay for water. Pay for clean. If it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide Pods.
Water content based on the leading bargain liquid detergent. Save on Tide Pods at CVS.